You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
Hello, I'm Jan Kepler, and this is Two Voices, One Journey.
And hi, I'm Frank Kudla, and this is the place to go when you want to hear two extraordinarily ordinary people talk about things that interest them. So, Jan, we're recording this on Labor Day. I don't know if anybody's going to be hearing it on Labor Day, but I wish everybody had or is having a happy Labor Day. We just kind of had a staycation, which was very nice, and it was a four-day weekend for you.
Yeah, that was very nice. I know I'm getting spoiled with a three-day weekend, so this was a bonus.
Yeah. Other good news this past week, this past weekend, F1 is back after a four-week break.
Yay.
And where we let off is with McLaren dominating, and that has continued into the first race of the, what's really past the second half. I think there's only 11 races to go, but after the break, I'll call it the second half. So McLaren is dominating. Piastri won. He also set a track record in the Netherlands. So that was exciting. That was fun to watch. It was, I was having withdrawals there for
Oh, me too. Yeah, no, that was a very good race. And they had commented about the weather and potentially how bad that could be. And I really thought that that was going to be a factor. Yeah. And it turned out not to be at all.
Yeah.
But very, very exciting race. A lot of contact.
There was, yeah. And I'm not sure if that's just because they were just coming back off of a four-week break and the adrenaline was really running high. Yeah, I'm not really sure what it was. But, yeah, there was a tremendous amount of contact. And there was more passing than I anticipated because they had said it was a narrow track. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was going to be like Monaco all over again.
Yeah, it was an interesting track. I like that it had, you know, banked parts.
Yes.
And lots of different, I don't know, S's or whatever it is.
Yeah, it was a technical track.
It was.
So, also, I think since the last time we've been on, Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift have announced their engagement.
Woohoo!
So, shout out to them. They seem like nice people.
They do. I'm happy for them. I think they're both 35 or whatever, and good for them.
Yeah, that's actually not a bad age to get married to, because you are who you are, and you basically know who you are. So, yeah, well, good luck to them. I'm not a Chiefs fan, and as you know how I feel about Taylor's music. Well, I don't dislike Taylor's music, but it's a little too poppy for me, even though I am kind of a fan of the pop genre.
Even though you watched the entire Eras Tour movie.
Well, I had to see what it's all about. I had to see what the hype is all about.
I see. It was research. Okay.
Yeah,
for 3 hours.
For my own edification. Was it that long? Was it 3 hours?
Yes, it was.
So it was as long as the Mission Impossible movie.
Well, and much more enjoyable.
Anything was more enjoyable than the Mission Impossible, the final, whatever the heck this last episode or installment was.
I don't know, but I could have avoided seeing that. So
yeah, anyway. They could have edited about an hour and a half out of it. It might have been watchable. Mm-hmm. But, just a reminder too, we have a website. It's Two Voices, One Journey, just spelled the way it is spelled, .com. And it has a blog on it, so I post a couple of things. Every week or so, I'll post an opinion or some insight, or at least something that I think is an insight. And there's a space there for you to ask us questions or make comments, tell us how much we suck and how amateurish we are, which is fine. I've gotten a few of those. I'll deal with that. Before we get into Lububus, tulips, and bubbles, I just read before we started recording, actually it was just about an hour ago, in a journal article, that China is building parts for Russian drones. This is a topic for another day. It doesn't fit in with what we're talking about today, so I won't go any further. But I'm really getting tired of these dictators that President Trump says he gets along so well with, just running roughshod over international norms. It's just as disruptive as he is with their tariffs, this cabal that is happening. I don't know if we're going to call it an axis of evil again, but it's a little annoying. We'll talk about it in the future. Right now, I'm talking about Cracker Barrel.
That's a very important, politically charged topic.
Well,
ironically,
it certainly made the news for the last week. I mean, it almost dominated the news. I think it led a couple of nights on NBC.
No, I know.
And Fox News ran a couple of stories on it. But anyway, so Cracker Barrel recently, or just recently now, announced that it's getting rid of the new logo. The whole thing was they
put up a new logo. So if people have, you know, been in a cave or on vacation or something and they didn't know, the stink was...
was that Cracker Barrel was changing their logo. They were trying to modernize it a little bit. So their logo currently, or used to feature, and does now currently feature since they reversed the decision, and an older man in overalls with it leaning on a barrel, assuming it has crackers in it, and then a particularly distinctive font saying Cracker Barrel. And they changed that. They got rid of the images and just went to Cracker Barrel with a little bit more modern font, same colors, but they got rid of the old guy with the Cracker Barrel, and that caused a stir. I don't know who the stir was mostly. I don't know if it was a conservative thing.
Yes, it was.
It was
a conservative thing. And the thing was, because they got rid of the cracker, which was the old white guy, and the barrel. And like, so it was being claimed that they were becoming woke. Yeah. Instead of having, you know, really literally a cracker and a barrel on it. Like, you know, BFD, like we don't have anything else to think about.
How dated is that term, a cracker? I spent a couple of years in Africa growing up in my teen years, and I remember being called a cracker. That was a big deal in the 70s. That's
oh, yeah.
Certainly is better than the N-word. I mean...
No, I think Richard Pryor used it a lot. He used to call people crackers. We got that guy in Los Angeles calling us a cracker.
So within 10 days of their announcement of the new logo, which they had a big deal. They had a big thing in Times Square, and they were really really pushing this change to the new logo. They reversed it. They made the announcement 10 days after the initial announcement that they're going to go back to the old logo, the original logo. Now, I know that Cracker Barrel is really a manufactured slice of America, Americana. It's sort of a Disney-esque view of what rural America was.
Right, and they had all the stuff, you know, attached to the walls all over the place. There were other restaurant chains that kind of went for that look, too, but they had, like, old signs or old toys or farm equipment, whatever. It was just nostalgia. Nostalgia.
Yeah, that's what it was, and it was just a refuge from modern life. Now, I think they were founded in 1969, so that... Americana was already gone when they founded it, but I don't really have a problem with it. Back in the 90s, when I was a manufacturer's representative in the Midwest, traveling the highways around Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Pennsylvania, Missouri, Kansas, well, anyway, everything that's in the Midwest, I used to frequent Cracker Barrel. One, I liked the food, particularly the pork chops and mashed potatoes and green beans. So the food was fine. It was predictable. But what I really liked is they had an audiobook rental program. And it was great. It started out on cassettes early on. And you could rent an audiobook on cassette at one location, one of their stores, and return it at another store. So on the nights when there wasn't any Cincinnati Reds baseball on the radio, which I would listen to when I was driving from city to city after my daily appointments, I would listen to an audiobook. And it was great. I probably went through, boy, in a couple of years I did that. I went through a couple of dozen books. So I thought that was just a really great program. Anyway, punchline is I don't blame Cracker Barrel for the sorry state of affairs. I mean, the company's a victim of the internet's endless search for something to be outraged about. That's all the internet is. It's a place for people to troll and look for things to be outraged about. Mm-hmm. And this is the most, I would love to have this level of outrage over the war in Gaza and the war in Ukraine, but yeah. This seemed to be much more important. So I've got a question for you. What is a labubu? Did I pronounce that right?
Yeah.
Labubu.
Labubu.
Okay. I just learned about these.
Okay. Yes. Well, they're a big deal, and apparently they've been a big deal for a long time.
Actually. Like, how long a time? How long have I missed out on this?
Well, actually, the characters are based on a trilogy of books written by, I'm trying to think, something Lung. Anyway, they're from the Netherlands. They're what Labubus are. They're forest fairies or elves, forest elves. And so these dolls are these little caricatures of, yeah, anyway. The books, I think, were published in the, I don't know, maybe it was 2015. They didn't become really popular, this big deal, until the author signed a licensing agreement with a company called Pop Mart to actually produce the toys for retail. And so it's a plush doll. It's a bag charm. They're kind of creepy. They're highly sought after collectibles. They sell for $27.99 at Walmart, but they have blind boxes, so you don't know what you're getting until you open it up. So they have limited editions inside, special ones, secret versions or whatever, and those resell for hundreds of dollars on eBay. And so, I mean, I'd seen celebrities with these. Actually, I saw Lady Gaga had one, and they had, it's like a little keychain thing, and she hangs it off her purse, and it's like, you know, her, one of her tags for her fans, where she called them monsters, little monsters.
Oh, little monsters.
Yeah, little monsters. And so these things are actually, they're not cute at all.
No, they first caught my attention when we went out for breakfast a couple of weeks ago on Friday, and we were, was it breakfast or was it lunch? What were we doing?
It was brunch.
It was brunch. Okay, yeah. We're out for brunch. And there was a, and I'll use the term loosely, a gentleman in front of us in line with a handbag, and he had a Labubu attached to the handbag, and yeah. That's when I first asked Jan, "What the hell is a Labubu?" So this reminds me a lot. It reminds me of something else, which I know you're going to go into. That it reminds me a lot in the 70s and 80s of Hummels and Stife stuff animals.
Yeah,
people were just buying them. And,
well, Beanie Babies.
Well, Beanie Babies is
right.
That was huge.
Right,
I mean, that's bigger than Cabbage Patch dolls.
Yes, and the thing about the blind boxes that they sell them in, it reminds me of like baseball cards, where we had, you know, Batman cards, things like that, like, you know, whether it was Tops or whatever, the gum was horrible in the packs, but you didn't know what kind of cards you were going to get. So, I mean, it was always, you know, luck of the draw and kind of interesting, and you could trade with people and stuff like that. So, that's kind of what this is like. But what I find very interesting about it, bottom line, is Pop Mart, who makes the Labubu dolls. They also make other things, too. And they have accessories and all kinds of insane stuff. Their stock price, their market value, their cap is $54.9
billion.
Billion? Billion.
Holy cow.
B with a billion, which is three times as large as Mattel and Hasbro combined at this point in time. So this, the books were published in 2015. I think they started producing these, Pop Mart started producing the toys in 2019, maybe 2020. So for the last 5 years, these things have just been going nuts. Now, I didn't really realize it or see them before. I mean, Naomi, who is it, Osaka?
Osaka, yeah.
Yeah, at the U.S. Open. She had a custom Labubu.
Oh, okay. Yep. Well, maybe it'll help her. She plays Coco Gauff. I don't know if it's tonight or tomorrow, but she plays Coco Gauff in what's supposed to be, or what is being billed as one of the biggest matches in ladies' tennis in years. But, yeah, so I guess it's too late to get in a Labubu craze and put them in our investment portfolio. I certainly wouldn't do it now, because if anything smells like a bubble.
It's like the Labubus. Well, it's interesting because, yeah, it's like Beanie Babies. And then you and I talked about this. Actually, you had brought it up. Very interesting. Something called Tulip Mania. Tulip the Flowers.
Yes.
And this is from a long time ago, late 1500s, I guess. Tulips were brought from the Ottoman Empire to Northern Europe. And they just became very, very popular right away. And so, you know, wealthy people wanted them, and it was a status symbol, and yada, yada. Well, by 1633, their popularity had increased. The demand exceeded the supply. Prices for individual rare bulbs grew, and so did speculation.
Well, they were selling, I read somewhere, they were selling for the price of a house.
Yeah, or you could have, like, one bulb would be a dowry for a bride for a wedding. But the interesting thing was, I mean, it started off the upper class. Well, then it kind of went down to poor people and middle class. And so they were the ones that started buying the bulbs based on the value increasing and hoping to sell it at a higher price. So, which is not a Ponzi, but anyway. In 1637, the tulip market crashed. And it just came about because all of a sudden people started to doubt whether it was going to continue to rise.
Right.
So the whole thing just absolutely collapsed. And almost overnight, raising people's fortunes, ruining people financially, and all this kind of stuff because they were just speculating that somebody else was going to buy it. And when I was looking this up, I thought it was very interesting. I found they also, speculative, like a bubble, whatever, but they also refer to it as the greater fool theory, which I think is wonderful. The willingness to buy an asset, not because of its fundamental value, but because of the belief that someone else is likely to pay an even higher price than you did.
Yeah, that's...
stock market.
That makes the Labubus look a little bit sensible anyway. I don't know. There's something... I don't know if I'd invest in a living organism, unless I was a farmer. But, that's just fascinating. This has been going on for centuries, where people do this speculation on things that are just silly. Although, I guess we do the same thing with gold. I mean, gold doesn't really have much intrinsic value. I know it's used in some electronics and a few things, but... We kind of play the same game with gold, is we're just hoping that somebody else is going to pay more for it. And I know it's been a currency for centuries.
But I mean that's like the stock market.
Yeah,
you invest in stocks because you hope somebody the value will go up. That would be one thing, and a lot of them do have value. But
well, speaking of the stock market, I want to talk about a real bubble that we've got going on right now outside of the Labubus, and it's the AI bubble. I do think it is something real. Last time we talked, and it was probably a couple of months ago, we talked about AI. And I had a very dour outlook for AI, the damage that it could do to humankind in the long run, or in the future, when we reached superintelligence, artificial superintelligence, or even artificial general intelligence. I thought that it would be an existential threat to the human race. I've been reading lately, I'm not 100% sure that's the case anymore. A lot of things are being labeled AI that are frankly not AI. I mean, what they're trying to do is they're trying to plug into the hype. People are trying to plug into the hype around AI and then mine the vast investment dollars being made both by private and military, private equity and the military. And the more they hype it, the more money they bring in. And it's just sort of a self-perpetuating cycle. And there are some numbers. Oh, well, anyway, other things that aren't AI, the algorithms that help you select music or suggest music for you on Apple Music or on Spotify, that's not AI. It is not a sentient being. It is not thinking and saying, oh, you like jazz, let me give you this. It's all based on math.
Well, and I think part of it, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I had read somewhere where they're saying that AI, artificial intelligence, isn't even really a tech term. It's a marketing term. And whether that's the case or not, I mean, it's like you're saying, it's really thrown around a lot more than necessary. And algorithms, that's a really good example. We've had those for, 20 years or more. And I think we tend to anthropomorphize stuff.
Yeah, we watch too many movies, but I think that I think the whole AI thing came into place in 1956 when there was Cambridge. Anyway, there was a discussion between computer experts or whatever was considered a computer at that time and some philosophy experts, and they coined the term artificial intelligence. And I think that's the meaning at the time. Now it's kind of like the label that's put on audio equipment that says high res. What the hell does high res mean?
Mm-hmm.
But they put it, there's a stamp on there that this is high res, as if that's some sort of statement as to its quality.
Right, it's like gluten free for food.
Yeah.
When it's a steak.
Yeah.
And it says it's gluten free. Well, duh.
Yeah, yeah. I'm surprised that Microsoft hasn't labeled Excel as artificial intelligence, because it does math.
I know, it's anything that computes.
Yeah, anything that computes and does things better than a human can
do it. Right, right.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, yeah. No, it's gotten nuts.
Yeah.
You are right.
Well, the current AI landscape does show several concerning parallels to the dot-coms. This is what this reminds me of now, the dot-com time, which I didn't see it coming. I know you were...
I was in it.
You were in it. Yes, yep. You were both a benefactor and a victim of the AI bubble. You rode that roller coaster from pretty much from beginning to end.
Yes, I did. It was a very interesting experience. I didn't get millions of dollars out of it, but you know.
Well, I remember one time when one of the companies I was working for was taken over by a public company. The first thing they asked us, and this is in 2001 or 2002, this is after the initial bubble had burst. But the first thing they asked us, what was our internet strategy? Mm-hmm. We were a consumer goods company selling through independent pet stores. Mm-hmm. And it was like, what is your internet strategy?
Because you just had to have one.
You had to have an internet strategy in the
2000s. It could have made absolutely no sense and been stupid and a money loser, but you had to have one.
Well, it not only could have, but it was. I think that's one of the differences between what I see as the AI bubble now and the dot-com bubble. Is the dot-com really didn't have a long-term business plan. It was acquiring views, acquiring customers. There wasn't a plan for profitability. I remember in the pet industry, I mean, they were selling 40-pound bags of dog food freight free, no shipping costs at discounted prices.
I know, but okay, petstore.com, we did not do that.
Okay.
I would not, I refused.
Oh, you gave away who you were with. You were Petco. You weren't with the puppet.
No, I was not with the puppet. Thought it was very cute. But anyway, yeah. So, I mean, you know, and there were some, dumb things kind of going on there. You're right.
Yeah. There's a massive gap between the investment and the returns right now in AI. In the first half of 2025 alone, AI startups, these are the startups, this is not the guys that are already established, have raised $44 billion. And Goldman Sachs estimates by the end of this year, they'll have raised $200 billion. I mean, that is just absolutely stunning. The valuation metrics are reminiscent of the dot-coms. Mm-hmm. NVIDIA, for example, has a price-to-sales ratio of more than 40. Hmm. Palantir has a PE ratio of 69. I mean, those levels are just absolutely unsustainable. One of the things that I'm trying to see here, if I've got the statistic, but they have to sell in the next couple of years something like $600 billion of AI services to even break even on the investment that's been made. That is just, I mean, $0.6 trillion.
Yeah, but it's the fear of missing out.
Yeah, that's what it is. I know
people just don't want to, be the ones that were like, nah, I don't think I'm going to get involved in that, and then turn out, that they were wrong.
Yeah, and it's still going. Every time somebody attaches the AI name to a company or to a product, it's absolutely booms. Anyway, the fundamental dynamic of massive investment chasing uncertain returns, combined with extreme valuation and widespread acknowledgement that the current spending levels are unsustainable, does suggest that we are in bubble territory. Whether it bursts dramatically as the dot-coms did or remains the same, the warning signs are there. And I know you and I are very modest investments. I've backed away a little bit from it. We're not as enthusiastic, although we certainly did benefit from it. But yeah, I think it's time to take a pretty good hard look at the whole AI hype, and Labubus. I wouldn't be investing too much. I'd invest in AI before I invested in a Labubu, because that one's a guaranteed bubble.
I know. Yes, I know that is.
You're going to see them in thrift shops.
Yes, that's not going anywhere. But I do want to say just real quickly in defense of the dot-coms, is the reason I joined one. Was because I saw the value of the alternative way to merchandise products. Mm. I mean, that it was virtual merchandising. You could sell the same thing. You could have only one in inventory, and you could display it and sell it 15 different ways, which you couldn't do in physical retail stores.
Yes.
It was too difficult. So, I mean, myself and I know other friends of mine that got into it, in like 98, 99, 2000, we really believed that it was a great way to communicate with consumers and sell products. Unfortunately, the companies themselves were run by people that were a bunch of MBA, knuckleheads that could not run a retail store if you put a gun to their head. And they were all about, like you said, acquisition.
Yeah.
Acquisitions.
Well, it's worked out. I mean, the e-commerce has worked out. I mean, the bubble burst.
Oh, it did. Because
it
is a good idea.
Yes.
It's a good idea. Yeah. And it was just like people had money. Everybody glommed onto it, blew the thing up. And then the result is now we have functional e-commerce. So, I mean, I think, yeah, the same thing with AI.
Oh, I think AI is going to be present in some way, whether it's at the current level where it's just the agentic AI, where there are things to help us get things done, write emails, and whether it's a chat and the generative AI making up photographs of Trump sitting on horses with his shirt off or whatever it is. But I think it's going to be with us. I think it's going to self-correct, though. I think from stock market standpoint, there's going to be a correction.
Absolutely.
So that's all I have to say on that.
Okay.
So what am I listening to? I'm sure that's your next question.
It was. I was just thinking that.
Yeah. Well, I'm listening to Natalie Merchant's 2023 album, Keep Your Courage. Now, you may recognize her name from 10,000 Maniacs, which were very big in the late 80s. And actually, I think I first discovered them, if you can call it a discovery, on Saturday Night Live. And they put out a couple of albums that were extremely good. Natalie went on her own way in the 2000s. Anyway, this album was put out in 2023. It's her ninth studio album. It comes nearly a decade after her last release. She'd been sitting idle for a while. I think there were some greatest hits and some showcase albums. But anyway, this album showcases Natalie's or Merchant's introspective lyrics, folk melodies, and unique vocals. It demonstrates her longevity and her artistic growth. It's absolutely a brilliant album. Thematically, the album explores love in all its forms, characteristic literary depth, weaving together captivating melodies and ethereal tales. It was a modest commercial success. It wasn't really a big commercial success, except probably among people like myself. But it was critically acclaimed. It was really it was very well received. So if you get a chance, listen to that. That's Natalie Merchant's Keep Your Courage album. And the first three or four songs are absolutely stunning. They're, I wouldn't call them toe tappers, but they've got good hooks and the lyrics are good.
Did Van Morrison come out with a new album recently?
Yes. Well, recently, within the last 2 years.
Okay. Because I was listening to something on the road the other day through Apple Music, and it was like a new album, I guess, of his.
Yeah.
And it was terrible. I mean, it wasn't terrible, but it wasn't great. It was like they had catchphrases, and he just repeated them over and over and over again. The songs, I don't know, they just weren't particularly.
I'll have to look into that. I know he had one about 2 or 3 years ago, which was a good album. But I've not heard that. I'll take a look at Apple Music and see if I can find what that is.
Yeah, I love Van Morrison.
That's disappointing.
It was just disappointing. So I don't know. Maybe I was listening to some person's compilation or whatever. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think a couple of episodes ago we did a Van Morrison listening to his Avalon Sunset, which was an album that both of us really like. I think that was one of the ones.
Of course. Yes. No. He's got classics. But that's why I was just asking, you know, if you knew that he had done something recently.
No, I was not aware of that.
Okay.
Anyway, well, that's a wrap from Frank and Jan. Thanks for walking this winding road with us. We'll see you around the next bend.